I'll jump for the mic.
All right, I call the Education Policy Committee to order. Members, in accordance with House Rule 10.05, Rep. Keeler will be participating in today's hearing remotely by Zoom or telephone with the speaker's approval. Rep. Keeler, can you hear us?
I can.
Wonderful. Well, excellent. I want to take this time to note that we do have a quorum present. And our first order of business today is approving the minutes. Representative Feist, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes of our last meeting? And if so, would you like to move the minutes from Wednesday, March 20?
Yes, so moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Feist has moved to approve the minutes from Wednesday the 20th. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Very good. Minutes are approved. Members, this evening, I'm going to conclude our committee work with taking formal action on the DE2 amendment. The process will be to first move House File 3782 before us, and then we'll move the DE2 amendment. Next, we'll consider the amendments to the DE2 amendment before amending House File 3782 with the DE2 amendment as amended. It's a mouthful. Then we'll have final discussions before voting to send the bill to the General Register. Are there any questions? And as they come up, we can handle them at that time. All right. With no questions, Chair Pryor, can I have you motion House File 3782 before the committee to be re-referred to the General Register?
So moved.
Now that House File 3782 is before us, can you move the DE2 amendment before us?
So moved.
Wonderful. Members, now that we have the DE2 amendment is formally before us, you'll recall that we had the walkthrough of this amendment on Tuesday and public testimony and member discussion yesterday on Wednesday. Were there any additional comments the bill author wants to add to the discussion from yesterday? Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have two comments. The first, Representative Bennett made a good point looking at the language around adding Indian cultural practice observance or ceremony. And it is in a section that is recognizing other and all other religious ceremony and practices that they should be considered as would provide annual notice of parents of the school district's policy referring to all of these kinds of absences. And so we feel like the spirit of what you were calling attention to is in the bill now, and we appreciate the calling attention to that particular part of it. We have added Indian cultural practices, observance, or ceremony right now, and we appreciate your support of that part. So thank you. And then a second comment that I have is that one of our testifiers, Denise Dietrich from MSBA, was highlighting the 2024 effective date on line 15.20 for the requirement for districts to have language access plans as and suggesting that that should be delayed, that that is too fast. But as you read on farther in the bill, line 15.8, you can see that the new language does not come into effect until 25-26. And so that is what's also taken care of in the bill, and we wanted to draw attention to that based on the testimony that we heard yesterday. So those are my comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Thank you. With the DE2 amendments before us, we'll move to adopting the amendments to the DE2 amendment. And at this point, if you don't mind, members, I'm going to move through the list of amendments. And we'll start with the author's amendment labeled A24-0259. Chair Pryor, can I get a motion to move that amendment before us?
So moved.
Wonderful. Ms. Parra, if you could briefly walk us through.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
So this is actually the revisers. The first one is the revisers amendment, and we're just going to take the revisers' word for it. This is a technical amendment, and then after that we can do the author's amendment. So I would like just the acceptance of the revisers amendment.
All right. And so, Ms. Parra, if you could walk through the revisers amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair?
No,
I don't think we need to walk through the revisers.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Seeing no questions or discussion, we'll move to adopt the A24-0259 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Very good. The A24-0259 amendment is adopted. All right, which one next? Our next amendment is also an author's amendment labeled A14. Chair Pryor, can I have your motion? Can I have you motion the A14 amendment before us?
So moved.
Thank you. Ms. Para, will you take a moment to walk us through the A14 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, Christina Para from House Research, and I'll walk through the A14. line 1.3 amends page 16, line 24, and that's changing a headnote that currently is definitions, but there are no longer any definitions in that subdivision, so it's changed to developing assessments. page 17, line 22, and lines 23, it reinstates stricken language relating to the state assessment system being aligned to revised standards. So language that was previously stricken is reinstated. And then on page 18, line 17, because that language was reinstated, that next paragraph is just relettered to be paragraph B. On page 18, line 20, the language that you see starting there is that becomes a subdivision rather than a paragraph with the headnote use of assessments. On page 43, line 11, the change you see there clarifies the entities that are eligible for a mentorship grant. On page 48, line 5, it adds the word all to clarify that it's the success of all students, and that's in language relating to the purpose of a charter school. On page 50, lines 30 and 31, and then going on to page 51, line 2, that clause is was deleted, and it's rewritten there. The changes between what is in the DE2 and in A14, it was deleting the word 2 in a few places and changing some commas, and it was intended to clarify the role of the authorizer. On page 52, line 9, and you'll see this in a couple of other places, it's deleting lead and inserting chief, and that's referring to the administrator role at the charter schools, so using the title chief administrator. On page 53, lines 3, and the changes on page 53, lines 3 and 4, it's correcting a cross-reference, so where currently it says subdivision 5, that should be subdivision 2 there, paragraph B. And it's also breaking clause 3 up into two separate clauses. There's the new clause 4 that is solicit feedback from the authorizer, charter school, et cetera. And then the following line, then the other clause is renumbered. On page 57, line 9, the change there is changing the order, moving the negative from the middle of the sentence to the beginning. To clarify that a teacher on the charter school board may have some administrative duties but is not required to. On page 59, line 15, it deletes the end of the sentence of a board member, and this is clarifying that the nepotism policy applies to the family of persons of the persons listed, family members of the persons listed, board member, et cetera, and not just of a board member. page 59, line 28, the change there inserts who is the charter school director or chief administrator, and so that's clarifying the training required for an ex officio member. On page 61, lines 3 and 4, changing the word and to its. This is in the section relating to contracts between a charter school and the authorizer, and it's clarifying that it's the charter school's authorizer, not just an authorizer. On page 61, after line 8, there's a new paragraph B there, which is in your amendment, on lines 2.7 to 2.9. And again, this is still in the section relating to contracts between a charter school and an authorizer. This paragraph allows a charter school to enter into a contract for legal services without opening a bidding process, but still requires the school to use the contract, to disclose the contract to the commissioner in accordance with paragraph A. And then there's a corresponding paragraph change on page 61. On page 65, line 10, it deletes everything after teachers, and that's the reference to cooperatives, and that's relating to the EMOs and CMOs relationship with the charter school. Page 66, that's adding the word or chief administrator, again, relating to the role of the administrator at the charter school. Similar change on page 67, line 8, deleting school director and inserting charter school director or chief administrator. The change on page 69, line 20, breaks the sentence up into two sentences to just be clearer there. So the second sentence is that the school starts with the school's dissemination activities must, and that's relating to, that they must be a part of the performance review. The remainder of the changes that you see in your amendment from line 2.17 to 2.25 is still within that section on information that's available to the public, and it's adding a new paragraph to the subdivision. So getting rid of that last sentence about the authorizer's financial statements and making it a whole paragraph. And it lists the information about the authorizer that the authorizer must make available upon the request of an individual.
Well, thank you, Ms. Parra. Do we have any discussion on the A14?
I just will Chair make Pryor. A comment that these changes, most of them are more wording and clarification on that order. Technical assistance we received from the department. I think the one that adds this additional exception for the charter for charter schools, that was some feedback that we got from the organization suggesting that this is also an allowable exception, and so we did add that.
Wonderful. Seeing no other questions or discussion, let's move to adopting the author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The A14 amendment is adopted. Moving along, the next amendment is labeled A11, and I believe it's Representative Berg is going to offer the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A11 amendment. This is the amendment that talks about ableism and disability justice. I really appreciated Representative Hicks bringing this to our attention. And it was a great discussion on how oftentimes disabilities aren't always visible and that this is an opportunity to have a really inclusive conversation about it. And I like that it's encouraged to include instruction for teachers, for teacher candidates on ableism and disability justice, and that it be provided by a person with a disability. I think that is going to provide teachers with valuable tools in a way that honors the contribution from our disability community.
Wonderful. And just to be sure, Representative Berg, can I have you motion the A11 amendment before us?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I motion the A11 amendment before us.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Is there any more discussion? Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and excuse me, thank you, Representative Berg. I always appreciate bringing conversations forward concerning the disabled community. I do have concerns, though, and intend to vote no on this, only because at this point there are no definitions for your terms here, ableism or disability justice, and I think it's really important as a legislature that we make those definitions clear so that we have common understanding when districts are attempting to adopt these things and create standards and curriculum for them. There are many different views on what disability justice is. I actually looked up a number of different definitions, and as well as ableism. So I guess I would encourage more work on this before we adopt something like this, even though it's just encouraged, which I appreciate that it's not a mandate. I do believe those definitions are really important.
Any more discussion? Chair Pryor?
I thank you, Representative Berg, for bringing forward this amendment. I think it was a good way to recognize the discussion that we had and to continue the work that we need to do in this area. And I do appreciate, Representative Bennett, your comment that definitions would be appropriate. And I think as this before the end, I think that, you know, that's something that we might consider. But I feel comfortable adopting the amendment as it stands because we are talking about encouraging, and even to define can be part of that discussion of hearing this. So I recommend adopting the amendment.
Any closing remarks, Representative Berg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate your point of view, and I feel like we have a basis to work on this. So thank you for that.
All right. Seeing no more further questions or discussion, we'll move to adopting the A11 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The A11 amendment is adopted. Next on the list is Amendment A-19. I will motion the A-19 amendment before us. And just in a word of introduction here, this has to do with the special education reciprocity portion of the Pelsby layers found within the bill. And the amendment here is moving to add one representative from the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. We felt it was important to include more voice. Any discussion on the A-19? Chair Pryor.
Thank you for the amendment, Mr. Chair.
All right. With that, no further questions or discussions, we'll move to adopting the A-19 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. A-19 amendment is adopted. Next on the list is the A-6 amendment. I believe Lee Bennett is carrying this one forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please move it before the committee.
I move the A-6 amendment.
Thank you. Please speak to the amendment.
All right. I won't say a lot because we actually just heard this as a bill about 2 days ago, but this simply creates a Purple Star school designation, lists the criteria for that, and directs the Department of Education to come up with a process for schools to apply if they so wish.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Do we have any discussion on the A-6? Chair Pryor.
I do want to add, we could put Representative Keeler on the phone right now, but that might slow things down a little bit. So I will give the comment that she passed on to me before this meeting, that she does appreciate that you made the change, that it's not just the Minnesota National Guard, but the National Guard, that we would recognize students. And that was a point well taken, and she appreciates your attention to that and is very much in the support, as I am, of adopting this amendment.
Any other questions or comments? Lee Bennett, final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I forgot to mention, Chair, that we did make that addition. Appreciated that comment from her. Just wanted to clarify. I think it did include that already, but we'll just make sure.
Right. And then it's not Minnesota, but just the National Guard, so it would recognize North Dakota or Wisconsin.
Thank you.
Or Iowa.
We'll move to adopting the A-6 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. A-6 amendment is adopted. Next on our list here is the A-7 amendment. Lee Bennett, are you offering this one as well?
I am, Mr. Chair.
Please move the A-7 amendment forward.
I move the A-7 amendment.
Thank you, Lee Bennett. Can you please proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment really is just a clarifying language that clearly articulates that MDE is still required to include student assessment results in public reporting on school performances. With all these technical changes and language cleanup, the concern is that that clear directive may get lost, and we just want to make sure that parents and the public really have that information still available to them. So that is the purpose of this amendment, just to kind of make that clarifying point that these things will still be on the student school report card.
Wonderful. Any further discussion? Chair Pryor?
Appreciate the clarification, and I recommend accepting the amendment.
All right. Seeing no other questions or discussion, we'll move on to it. Oh, excuse me. Lee Bennett. All right. Let's move to adopting the A-7 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Very good. The A-7 amendment is adopted. Next on the list is the A-10 amendment, and I believe Representative Bakeberg is going to be moving that forward. Can you please move the A-10 amendment before us?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bakeberg. Please speak to the amendment.
Yeah, we had a good conversation around this amendment yesterday, but basically what the amendment does is it strikes MDE's proposal to delay the release of assessment data by 3 months. So instead of moving it to December 1st, we would keep it at the September 1st date. And I think it's important to do that because think about right now, students are taking or beginning to take MCAs coming up here in April. As the law currently stands, assessment results are not available publicly until September 1st. And if we delay that further, It will be almost 8 months after the student takes the assessment. And I had a principal reach out to me and say, Ben, you know, if I go to the doctor and the doctor knows something is wrong with me and they have the answer in the envelope, it just isn't logical to say, let's wait 8 months to do it. Frankly, it's not logical to wait 4 months, but I understand the background. So, you know, where we're at, given our performance for our students, the rates of proficiency in reading and math, it really ties the hands of school districts and families not to have that assessment data readily available. So with that, we had a good conversation yesterday. And then I think it also, I just want to point out on line 22.23, the September 1st date would actually align with line 22.23 as well. As it says, the commissioner must make available performance reports by the beginning of the school year. So that language may provide, if we leave it, it'll provide some confusion unless I'm reading that wrong. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Further discussion, Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I think we have discussed this point a couple times. It came originally from the governor's bill when it was first introduced, continued on in this DE amendment of the governor's bill. And I still think that our December 1st deadline is the more appropriate. And there are two main arguments or two values in the moving it to December 1st is, first is that that would be the latest and still the intention from the department, and I take the department on its word that they will deliver the results earlier as they are available. But what they said is that, you know, at the beginning of the school year, collecting this data, having to go back to the schools, getting clarifications, making sure it's all accurate, it comes at a very hectic time for schools. And so that, in some cases, might be causing a burden for our local school districts to producing it on that scale at that rate. And so then the other part is that we do want to make sure that this is good, accurate data, and that just early data isn't always the best data. And so I think that we want to maintain that idea that we want very much accurate data that our department is reporting to us in the legislature and to the public. And so I think that I feel comfortable maintaining the date that is in the bill now, and I would oppose the amendment.
Any other discussion? Lead Bennett, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd just like to add my thoughts to this as well. I really feel like first of all, a September 1st date actually gives the Department of Ed and the schools the opportunity to work over the summer, because I believe tests typically end, are given probably March, April, and they have the whole summer, which is a good time for schools to be able to work with the Department of Ed to do this. And once September 1st starts, that information should be out to the public. I just feel like as we push these test scores out farther and farther away from the actual taking of the test, it really devalues that test. And we're already having issues with students not wanting to take it and seeing that value or schools. And I think we need to show schools, yes, this is an important test. We'll get that data out for the public right away. And I just would really encourage that date to stay at September 1st.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Representative Begberg, any closing remarks?
No.
Oh, I would just, and I respect the thank you, Mr. Chair. Respect your comments, Madam Chair, as well, about the data cleanup process. That does take time. And, you know, in one of my previous administrative roles, I was the district assessment coordinator, and Lead Bennett hit the nail on the head. That process is done, you know, basically right after the assessments are given and then throughout the summer. That was one of my main roles as the district assessment coordinator. So, you know, frankly, it needs to be done before the school year starts. Otherwise, the hustle and the bustle of the school day will create more of an issue. So that's why I think at least moving it to the September 1st is in the best interest of schools. Ultimately, it's in the best interest of our students and our families so they have accurate data so that they can be intervening.
Thank you. We'll now move to adopting the A-10 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
The amendment fails. Is not adopted, excuse me.
Fail.
Excuse me. Pardon me. Next on the list, we have the A13 amendment. I believe this is Representative Erdahl.
No failures here.
Would you like to move the amendment before us, please?
Yes, I would move the A13.
Thank you. Please speak to the A13.
First of all, I need to make a technical correction. Line 1.9 should read after and not before. It kind of changes the whole meaning of the amendment.
At this point, Chair Pryor, I'm not a little bit unsure of how we proceed if we're going to change the amendment at this point.
So it, Representative, it very much does change the whole meaning of the amendment.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to because when we considered it and thought about what it says and what it would mean, would you consider withdrawing the amendment at this point and introducing it at a later time where we could understand what it is that you were trying to, what the amendment was supposed to do? It will be on the general registry on the floor.
Well,
Representative Erdahl.
Yeah, Representative Pryor, I could just explain what it does. I mean, this isn't a radical. Well, it is. It flips the whole. This before shouldn't have been there. After should have been there. And mm-hmm. It just is. It's easy to explain the meaning of the bill.
My concern is that we have not had time to consider the impact of your amendment, and the implications of it. And that's why we have amendment deadlines, and so that we can review the amendments ahead of time and understand and process and think through consider carefully the amendment ahead of time. And this, as we have discussed, this is the opposite. Your amendment, it's the opposite of the amendment that we did consider and was looking at and was frankly confused about. That's true.
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, perhaps you could explain to me what it means then. Because I don't know.
Chair Pryor.
I think changing the before and after really changes the meaning of the amendment. And my point is that this evening, the amendment is different. And kind of the amendment you're asking, we can... I don't think that we should make the change. I think that we should reject the A13 amendment.
Well, Mr.
Representative
Chair,
Erdahl.
Certainly you can do that, but I'm guessing you were all prepared to vote no on the way it was before. Maybe you have a better chance when you understand what it is.
But
would
at
you,
a later
would you like to offer an oral amendment to the A13.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we should accept an oral amendment on this one.
Okay. At this point,
if I could ask.
Please, Representative Erdahl.
Maybe staff could explain the difference between a technical change and an amendment. Come on, you can do it.
Ms. Parra.
Mr. Chair and members, I understand Representative Erdahl to be offering an oral amendment to the A13. I don't think I can say whether it's technical or not technical.
You guys just really want to hear me on the floor, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sure do.
All right.
Representative Joaquin, do you have a comment?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hill. I hate having us put nonpartisan staff in that kind of position. This does really completely reverse what the amendment did before. So I think Chair Pryor has a good point that it can be worked on a little bit more and discussed and see what the impact is.
Ms. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Representative Ukeem, I wasn't trying to actually put them in a bad spot here. I thought maybe there really is a difference between a technical change and an amendment that could be explained. But I understand that you guys really want me to do this on the floor. so that we can have more attention and more people watching. So we'll do that.
Thank you. Is there any other discussion, Tom? Representative Ewing.
Chair Hill, I know it's late, Representative Erdahl, but please don't try to assign motives to all our members. That would be helpful. I know you're busy talking there, just a sec. I know it's late, and I know you wanted this amendment this way, and it might have been drafted wrong or whatever happened, but please don't assign motives to our members.
Motive?
You were saying that we want to hear you speak on the floor.
Oh, I'm joking. Come on.
I know. It's been a day, so I just would like us to keep some decorum. That'd be great.
Thank you, Chair Youakim. Any final remarks, Representative Erdahl?
No.
Okay. With that, would you like to withdraw the amendment at this time, Representative
Erdahl? I would withdraw the amendment at this time.
Thank you. We will move on in our agenda. Next on the list, I believe, is the A-16. And if my records are right, I believe Representative Knutson is going to be offering this amendment. Is that right?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Can you please move the A-16 before us?
I will move the A-16 before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Knutson. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. This amendment, because I know that you didn't accept Bakeberg's amendment, you were waiting for mine. It does something a little bit different, though. This amendment would give our parents access to their child's assessment scores earlier. As it's designed right now, our children take these tests in April, May, sometimes March, but we don't get the results until the end of August. By that time, we've already missed an entire summer. And from a personal example, I had a child take this test and didn't do very well. I wasn't notified because he had done well the year before, and they thought maybe it was just a one-off. A year later, I got a phone call from the school saying he hasn't taken this test well twice now. So we want him to take a remedial class. Lost an elective, had to go into a remedial math class, it was. And we lost a whole, at least summer, by me not knowing that he needed this help. I was a math leaguer in high school. I love math, so I could have very easily helped catch him up if I would have known. And I know I'm not the only one. After talking to some of my friends about it, that similar things have happened with them. So I just think allowing parents, you know, schools have this information within an hour of taking the test, so they know what our kids got. But I really think it would help parents to help their kids. And that's what this all comes down to, is how can we best help our students? But by missing that whole entire summer, there's already a great big learning loss in summer. But if a child's already struggling before the end of the school year, we're just making that worse by not even alerting the parents that there could be a problem here. You might want to look into this. And then, quite frankly, I mean, it's just another thing that kids can do in the summer. You know, summers get long to help them. With their math, to fill their time doing something like that would be a great benefit to not only the parents but also the child. So I hope that you consider this a friendly amendment. I think just helping our parents help our students is the right direction to go. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Chair Pryor, any comments? I have Chair Youakim on the list as well.
I'll defer to Chair Youakim first.
Thank you, Chair Hill, and I could see where that would be extremely frustrating. I had a student that was not a very good test taker, and it was difficult to get them up to speed, too. And you're right, we have summer learning loss. Personally, I think we should look at year-round school model, but like a few months off in the summer, because a lot of our schools don't have air conditioning. But here in this amendment, you're requiring the commissioner to send out all the information, which would be an added cost, and it would also slow down the process. So I don't know if you want to look at it, maybe rework and ask that, because the schools do have the data, mm-hmm. that maybe we should notify the parents that they can ask or do something instead of having them spend all this money on mailing. And so I would suggest this might be not the right way to approach it, but that there might be another way.
Thank you, Chair, or excuse me, Representative Berg.
Yes, thank you. And I believe Chair Yuki may have answered it, but I'm just going to ask the question out loud. Is there not a way for a parent to be proactive and ask for the test score rather than waiting for it to come to them? I need the clarification. I'm unfamiliar.
Representative Knutson. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. And yes, in our DE2 on page 22, line 28, there is a non-public. The schools aren't allowed to release this information. They're just not until the commissioner publicly releases the data. So we're just asking for that to be changed where that can be released to parents earlier.
We have MDE here in the room. Would you like to come down and comment at this time? Please state your name for the record and proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Ado Shuni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education. And I've been learning over the course of this session that it is a complex set of requirements around data, timelines, and capacity for getting assessment results as well as accountability results out to tell a full picture of how our students are doing, how our districts are doing, how our state is doing. One of the points in the timeline that was just discussed was when the data gets back to the schools immediately after the test is taken. That's within 3 days. I think it's currently in 120B.302. I think we do some reorg in the bill. But that is required under the computer adaptive test to be sent to the districts within 3 days. The non-public nature of the data is that it still can be shared with the subject of the, in this case would be the student and their parents of that data. And so school districts, charters, and other LEAs have the authority to share or ability to share the results of those assessments with their students and with the parents.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Ms. Lead Bennett.
Thank you. I do have a question for Mr. Uni, if I could.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Uni, with the current way things work and the release of the data September 1st, does the commissioner or MDE send that information to the school districts and then they disseminate at that point? Is that when that information is given to the parents about their child?
Mr. Uni.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, that's a great question. Yes. So what the department does is we work, obviously, with all the school districts and charters and other LEAs that submit the test to us. Over the course of the summer, we engage in validation. I want to be clear. The information that goes back to the districts within 3 days of the test being taken is preliminary data, and that really is the value for what the individual student's doing. In June, districts get kind of a spreadsheet with, a data file that's instructive for them for instructional purposes, scoping and sequence of stacking classes together, professional development. So districts have that information pretty early on, but that's very, it's still non-public data. In July, August districts get non-public embargo data, which includes accountability factors. We're still doing cleanup and finalization. Now, under current law, but no later than September 1st, that's when we provide electronic and upon request paper files by the district, and we provide them directly to the district or charter school or other, I should just say LEA, local education agency, to then provide those to the parents directly. I know it's a long-winded answer, but I'm using my opportunity to paint the whole picture here as much as I can.
Yeah, thank you.
Follow-up, Lee Bennett.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that. So would there be anything that would inhibit the commissioner of the Department of Ed from just getting that parent information out sooner, the parent student, because I do agree with this amendment. It's incredibly important to have that more immediately available so that different things can happen over the summer to remediate if that's needed. So being it's already done, is it that difficult to just have that component go to the schools and go out to the parents, right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bennett, so the information that's provided at the end of September is not just the assessment results, but the accountability factors that we have in there. So attendance, graduation rates, really the state of the school site, the state of the school, the state of the state around a cross of academic factors. Because the importance of that, of combining assessment results with these accountability factors, is we give parents a full picture of what's happening, not just a test in time. We really want to bring value to that test, that it's not just a static picture in time and here's a number you did on math, here's a number you did on science, if you take the science test, here's a number you did on reading. We want to say, how does that fit into the overall picture of what your student is receiving, how your school is doing in providing that information? And so that's kind of the totality, that we don't have all that information available until late summer, and we're finding a lot of challenges with that timeline, one of the reasons why we're coming with that. And especially now that we're about to enter that new phase of these tests that are being tweaked for the standard cycle that we've just gone in, which is the ELA, the math and science standards, where we have to revise the assessments to be able to catch up with that. Additionally, one of the challenges that we have, which is why we're looking at kind of the later date, is the revision to the access test, which is for our EL, or for our English learners. That is done by the WIDA consortium, which we really have very little control over in terms of when they get us the information, they do their standardization work. So that full picture, we really do have to wait until the later fall, but I'll go back to my earlier comments that, you know, the LEAs do get that preliminary data from the department within 3 days of the test being taken, and they do have the authority to share share with their parents.
Any further follow-up, Lee Bennett?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that good information. I do think we need to make sure that it's very clear that districts can and really should be encouraged to give that information to parents, or at least, as Chair Youakim said, make sure parents know they can get that data. So thank you for that information.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the discussion. I was struck by Representative Knutson's story. I can relate. And so it has been quite the day. I need somebody to say, yes, there is a mechanism through which a parent can go and ask for this information rather than waiting for an organization, the agency, to bring it to them. Is there something in place where the parent can proactively ask for the information? Thank you for the indulgence. It's been a day.
So I think what we just heard is that the information is available to the school. And so there's no reason they can't get that information after 3 days.
We'll go next to Representative Bakeberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Uni. I'll be honest, I learned something tonight because, frankly, I've always said we can't share the data because I've been told we can't share the data because of the, on page 22, line 28, about that non-public data. So maybe that's just my interpretation, but that, quite frankly, is pretty across the board from principals that I talk to. So we have a disconnect, I think, between the department's interpretation and just practical application of it. And I think just making it very, very crystal clear that students, because what happens if I'm taking the MCA math test, I submit my test, and there's a preliminary score that pops up. So I have a preliminary result right away. And then Mr. Uni walked through, but we have always been hesitant to share that information because we have always felt like it was non-public data. Mm-hmm. So if we can provide clarity to families so that we can avoid situations like Rep. Knutson talked about, I think that's a common sense solution to it. And I think it might be a communication piece.
Any further comments, Representative Youakim?
Just quickly, too, and that is, it's good that we all are lifelong learners, right? And it's good to be clear about that. And sometimes we can get together in a room and find out new information and fix it without putting a statute in. So I would say vote no on the amendment as it is.
Any further discussion?
I can say,
Mr. Chair, I forgot to add, too, MCAs, for folks to remember, are to see how our districts are doing teaching to the test and to see how our students are doing to those standards. But there is a plethora of other performative tests that kids take that are more instant, that are more directed to what they're learning, that are more helpful for the teachers and the parents as we go along. Mm-hmm. So the MCAs are just a unique thing that we do as a state. Well, not unique. All states do it in a different way. But it's mostly a measure for us policymakers to make sure that our standards are in place and our districts are teaching to them and things are running smoothly and to see how all of our kids are doing in general. So I'm a big believer of the MAP testing too, so that is more immediate for teachers. But I just wanted, let's just vote no and move on and talk offline.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Final thoughts here, Rep. Breyer.
I think that's where we are on this one, that the intent of what's here we appreciate, but that I think given the reality of the situation that we're a no vote on this, but continued discussion if it is a confusion within the our larger community about what exactly a school might be able to share with a student. If there is ambiguity about that, we can further discussion than that. Even this discussion may clear up some of that problem right now. So I'm still recommending a no vote on this one.
Thank you. Closing remarks, Rep. Sure. Knudsen.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, members. Thank you for the conversation about this. I do think that it is something that we definitely need to make sure our schools know that they can do. And even, just offering like a preliminary data disclosure, like this hasn't been, but something. We have to help our kids, and we can't help them if we don't know that they're struggling. So we have to do something. Maybe we can already do this, and if we can already do this, that's fantastic. Great, but let's let our schools know that we can already do this, because we cannot have another year go by where multiple students are needing help and not getting it. So thank you so much. Thanks for the discussion.
On the proposed A16 amendment, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No. No.
The A16 amendment is not adopted. Up next, we have the A17, and I believe this is Lee Bennett is going to introduce it. Would you please move the A17 before us?
I move the A17 amendment.
Wonderful. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So this amendment deletes two sections relating to the Tier 1 and special education licensure. And just to, add some background as to why I'm offering this, we know that the federal guidelines prohibit Tier 1 special ed teacher licenses, those teachers, from teaching longer than 3 years. And that's the problem. So this amendment actually offers the solution to that, because there's a lot more added things to the Tier 1 and 2 than just that. The solution is just don't let Tier 1 teachers teach longer than 3 years for the special ed license. And, Tier 1 and 2 are not optimal licensing for special education, absolutely not. They were also, those tiers, really never meant, except for a few exceptions, to be permanent licenses. They were meant to be doorways to offer various pathways for teachers to enter the profession and then move through those tiers to a 3 or 4. So I hate to see added weight and things added on to the Tier 1 as this does, as currently written in the bill. And I just feel like just saying 3 years and that's all they can teach. And that solves the problem with the federal issue. And it still allows our tiered system to work the way it's supposed to work, to be pathways for teachers to enter the field and then move on through those tiers. So I would just ask consideration of this amendment and appreciate the discussion that will come.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Lee Bennett, I appreciate what you're doing. I think it's actually the concept is great in terms of not having folks that are not adequately prepared to be with our students that are receiving special education services with them for extended periods of time, which is why we're here right now with the feedback from the feds. I'm going to ask for a no vote on this, because I strongly believe that the reality is that we do have these folks in the classroom with our kids, and we should make sure that they are adequately prepared to provide services to our students that need it the most. I think we have done a disservice to our students over the years since we've implemented the tiered system in the way that we've operated, which is why we have the feedback that we have from the feds. And I think we should do everything in our power to make sure that we rectify that and ensure that it doesn't happen as we move forward.
Lee Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate those comments. I also want to thank the chair and this committee for last year adding the teacher, special ed teacher pipeline options in there, because that is one of the methods to move these tier one teachers out of that tier and tier two and three and so on where they should be. Appreciate that. But I do think it's, again, important not to complicate these tiers so much that we don't, they're really not a good window or doorway into the profession. So I would again ask for your vote, and sure understand, I understand what you're saying there, but I still think keep it simple, keep it direct, and let's get those tier one teachers onto three and four like they should be.
Thank you. We'll move on to adopting the A17 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no.
No.
No. The A17 amendment is not adopted. Next on our list, we'll move on to the A8 amendment. Again, is this Lee?
18.
Excuse me, I apologize. A18. Is this a Lee Bennett again?
It is, Mr. Chair. I feel like I'm talking an awful lot right now.
Would you like to move it before us?
I would move the A18 amendment. Thank you.
Very good. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. So yesterday I made the point that I appreciate in the chair's omnibus bill here, we have changes for special ed that will help streamline things. For example, the adaptive PE changes. And I really appreciated the focus on addressing this licensure issue, but I feel like there is a better way that we can address this than a working group. Because this, the fact is, we know what the issue is. It lies within the PELSB, the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, and the many, many, many types of special ed licenses that we have in Minnesota that other states just don't have. So instead of, how I might say it, admiring the problem more through a working group, I don't think we need that working group. I think we can get PELSB to work, give them the tools, you know, that they need, basically saying, go for it. Let's streamline these licenses. And find ways to help teachers from other states be able to be special ed teachers here, because we really need those teachers. So this deletes the special education licensure reciprocity working group and instead directs PELSB to review and revise requirements for special ed licensing, and so we can streamline those requirements for out-of-state applicants.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask for a no vote on this amendment. I think the reasoning behind that would be that we've learned over time the importance of stakeholder voice. And in this case, we're going to have the most relevant practitioner voices coming around to solve this problem in the best way. Not the fastest way, but the best way. And as I understand it, with PELSB, the rulemaking process can be cumbersome and slow, and this would offer this group to operate on the timeline outlined in the statute, in the bill to move forward rapidly. So I would ask for a no vote. Lee Bennett.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I understand the need for that time sometimes, but I also understand when we have a huge problem right now of not having enough special ed teachers, and I think speed is of the essence at this point, and we can do this with speed and do it well. So I would encourage the adoption of this and appreciate your consideration.
Wonderful. We'll move on to voting on the A18 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. The amendment is not adopted. And next up is the A20 amendment. I believe this is going to be offered by Rep. Mueller. Is that accurate?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the A20 amendment in front of us.
Wonderful. Thank you. Please speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As many who have served on this committee with me both this term and last term know that substitute teaching has been something that I have worked on since the moment I've been elected, and a we have been working as a body to try to address the short, how we don't have enough short call substitute teachers. We came up with a way to have a pilot program. MDE kind of took it and reworked it and put their proposal out, which was adopted in 23. When I heard from Pelsby their report, they talked about that this has been the pilot program, which originated from Austin, was actually being incredibly successful. However, when I asked them for geographic information about where many of these substitute teachers were entering into this pilot program, they said they would get me more data. What we're hearing anecdotally is many of the people who are able to get the short call substitute expanded opportunities are not from rural areas because of the mandated $200 a day. And so what has happened is that unintentionally, we are keeping people out of this pilot program when we're seeing it work. And we want to make sure that it expands to as many people as possible, especially in our rural areas. And so working with Pelsby and MSBA, we came up with language here on 2.11, 2.12, and 2.13 that would simply give a little bit more autonomy and flexibility for our school districts that says that to participate in this program, this pilot program, a short call substitute teacher in the school district or charter school or, will get the existing rate of pay or whatever is greater of the of whatever is already available for them. So it's going to be something that's going to be helpful for our rural schools as they want to have expanded opportunity, but they simply because of how things are in our rural areas, are not able to do this mandate right here. We all know our substitute teachers are worth their weight in gold, and so the original bill that I had requested hearing on, there were some questions upon, and so working with Pelsby and MSBA, this is the language that they have told me that they, matter of fact, this language came straight from Pelsby. So it would be great if we could adopt this and expand the opportunities for our short call substitute pilot program to all of our schools in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Uecke.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Chair Hill, I was just trying to recall this conversation because the bill actually went through finance last year. So changing that number, I don't know if it would be good to do it in policy. I had not had any conversations with Pelsby. I know I did have conversations with the MREA about it, but I think it needs to be fleshed out a little bit. I mean, one of the reasons why we end up doing the short call sub isn't just because we need to get more subs in the classroom. We do. I became a short call sub this year instead of a para, probably going back to para. Like that better. Less stress. You teachers, I don't know how you do it. It's amazing. But part of the problem also is that there's not, folks aren't getting paid enough to not take another job. So it has to be more enticing, even in the local economy, to get folks to come in the door. And this is only a pilot project that's going to be done June 30th, 2025, so I'm not sure if we should be changing the rate of pay without having a further discussion with all the stakeholders, because I know there were, it was more than just Pelsby and MREA, it was the teachers and other folks coming in to talk about it. So I would just say no for now, but to have more discussion, would defer to the chair as well.
Chair Pryor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the comments, Chair Uecke. I will echo the point that this is a pilot and that we're going to finish the pilot. I think that the points that you're making is going to be important data and to have fleshed out those answers so that when you go forward with new policy related to short-term subs, this section will have been finished and that can be an issue that is brought forward and that at that point also then it would go to finance and that would be the learnings from this pilot can be applied to for future policy. And I think that's the way to proceed right now. But appreciate the amendment for this bill and raising now a flag and making note of something that will need to be addressed.
Lead Bennett.
Oh,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a question for Representative Mueller.
Oh, here
that's
we are.
Okay. Okay, I can ask you right now.
Okay? Proceed.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. I know I've heard the same issue, and we are very close together, Albert Lea and Austin, and with the Albert Lea schools and some of the surrounding schools as well, that they are hesitant to take part in this pilot because it's creating some animosity, actually, amongst substitute teachers because of this pay difference. And I think in the end, it's actually skewing our pilot, which is a study to see if it's working. And that does concern me because we want as many participants as possible to see if it's working or not. So can you just flesh out briefly how much, it's been a while since I've been teaching now, how much does a current short call substitute make in our local district, Southern Minnesota? And then I know the $200 is here, and why does that cause hesitancy for our schools to even enter the program?
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Hill, and thank you, Representative Bennett, for the question. I am also a substitute teacher. So as a teacher for almost 20 years and then being able to also trying to give my work this, but desperately wanting to stay in the classroom, I am a substitute teacher because that's what fits right now. Remember, the substitute teacher is not a contracted teaching role. It is different. You have flexibility in when you get to go to work, and there's not always a job available for you. So it's a very, very different role. We have a different set amount or pace for the substitute teachers simply because of what a school can afford to pay them and how they are attracting them. So when I started teaching or substitute teaching at the beginning of my career, it was $80 a day. Now it's $150 a day, and that's in Austin. I know in some of my other rural schools that it's different. I know Representative Knutson was talking in her area, it's 145. So yes, do our substitutes mean more to us than we can explain, more than to us than we could probably pay? 100%. At the same time, when you have someone who is a part of the pilot getting paid 200 versus someone else who's not and getting a different pay, which might be, you know, definitely causing some angst. But when we have people who have been told, hey, look, we have this spot open to you and we're able to open this up. Oh, I'm sorry. We guess we can't because I can't afford to do this right now because our is just not available to us right now. We have people signing up. People are asking for us. And as Representative Bennett said, you know, we're not going to be able to get a full picture of the pilot program if we have to turn people away. If we're continuing to turn people away, how are we going to get a full picture of what the pilot even is, if it's even working? And if it's supposed to be something that allows our school more autonomy and more flexibility, especially in the areas that are most difficult to find subs, which would be in our rural areas, and yet they're the ones who are shut out, I can't understand how this would be an actual accurate picture of how our pilot is working. All it is showing is how it's working in the metro then, which isn't what it was designed to do when it was created in my district in Austin. So I want to make sure, remember, the language we got was given to me by Pelsby, who we were just told was not even consulted, and this doesn't cost money. It doesn't need to go through finance. This is a top priority issue from MSBA, who does represent thousands of schools around our state. And so if you want more data, I don't know how much more data I can give you from without the experts who are telling you what they who are here to advocate for them. So, Mr. Chair, I would really urge us to not look at this as
sorry.
I feel that. Mm-mm. You know what? It's just back in the classroom. I mean, you know, and those are the things that I really want us to remember that. I think as we're trying to say no to this, we're making this more complicated than it has to be. This doesn't mean they can't be paid $200. It's just saying that it should be The local school district should be able to have this available to them and be able to pay them what they can so that we don't have to turn people away from the pilot.
Representative Joaquin.
Thank you, Chair Hill. I can tell that you worked on this, and Austin did have a great model that I tried to pass when I was education policy chair and get all the stakeholders about this close before it fell apart. So I appreciate that this got in last year. I want to draw your attention to, though, part of the reason why we wanted to do this pilot was to pull people in that don't always have that bachelor's or master's and the associate's degree or equivalent. Part of this was to try to get them interested in SUBE, and also our paras to try it to see if they could. And as a para, the reason why I'm going back, and not all metro districts pay like you think they do, I was only making 135 when I'd summoned some of our metro districts. In fact, the only time I made 200 was in one district if you picked up a shift on Friday, because they were so desperate for subs on Friday. So part of this is also to entice folks that don't have that degree already, would try the profession. Sometimes they're paras, so they would have a chance to sub, because I'm telling you, after being a para in a special ed classroom, when a substitute teacher came in that was not used to working with our kids, it was really the para that did the job. So we want them to be able to make a little bit more than what they're making right now currently in our classroom as well. So this was a way to also pull more people in and to be competitive with that. So I just didn't want people to have the false impression that all metro districts pay that, because they don't. So I still think that this would have to be discussed. You know, it was a pilot project we put in through education finance. More than happy to have those conversations before this hits the floor with all the stakeholders that were involved when we were figuring out this number. And I would just say a no vote tonight.
Thank you. Closing remarks, Representative.
Thank you, Chair Hill. I would like to just respond real quickly to that. It does say, if you look on 211, it says that the pilot program with either the same rate of pay as other short call substitute teachers in the school district or charter schools or the employee's existing rate of pay. So that means if you were a para and was a substitute teacher, you could be getting your same rate of pay there. That's what I'm understanding from what is what was given to me. We have to understand what the role of a substitute teacher is. And, when it was created in my district, the goal was to get people, like you said, to have other people who maybe had interest in the position or using paras so that they could go on and get their teaching license and that they're able to become in our classroom. To open up a pool of to our school districts that are more reflective of the student body, that actually opens up a new pool of applicants, and it doesn't achieve its purpose if this mandate here or this, if this really ties the hand of our school district. It doesn't achieve that purpose. The people who we want in our classroom or to get a taste of what it would be to be a teacher, to come and invest in our students, invest in the students that they live among, now don't even get that chance. And so I think that the pilot program was incredibly, was great that we passed it, but putting this on it is not achieving the purpose that we want. And so that's why I would, as I said, I appreciate all the comments. I've taught in both metro and rural schools, and so I get that. And while you're saying that they don't get 130, you're getting 135, but they have more resources at times to be able to pay the extra to participate in the pilot, where some of my schools don't have that. So I appreciate you considering this. I appreciate you being willing to work with me on this. I have asked several of the stakeholders. I have been working with many of them and actually got the language from an agency. This isn't anything that I wrote on my own. I literally got it from an agency. So I would really strongly encourage the committee to accept this language and accept this amendment. So thank you, Chair Hill.
Thank you. We'll move forward with the vote on the adoption of the 820 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
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 The 820 amendment is not adopted. Well, I think we've gotten to the end of our list, and so having no more amendments, we'll move to adopting the DE2 amendment as now amended. Members, this is not the final opportunity for discussion. Once again, we're going to be moving to adopt the DE2 amendment as amended, and we'll look for a vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, say no.
No.
And it is adopted. Having one final motion remaining, I'd like to open the floor to discussion on House File 3782 as amended by the DE2 amendment as amended. Any discussion? Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Chair Hill, and I just want to thank Chair Pryor. I know we did our thank yous yesterday. But having been the Ed Policy Chair, sometimes policy is even harder than finance. There's always a lot of policy that has been left behind for years and years, and we had a lot of catching up to do. And I just want to thank you for your work on this, and I want to thank you for your work last year, and thank you for the bill.
Next to Lead Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Pryor, I just want to say thank you very much. I've appreciated working with you, your kind nature, our weekly meetings, keeping us updated. Thank you. That was very wonderful. And I also appreciate your work in this and your dedication to this committee, to your constituents, and so on. I can see that. I can see your heart. And so I thank you for that. This bill, I believe, is a much improved version from what we were asked to approve last session. Last session I had a lot of heartburn. There's only a little bit with this one, but I just want to say a few areas where I feel like this policy bill falls short. One being it really lacks focus on what should be our number one priority, which is literacy. And I know some of those things are coming up in the finance bill, but I felt like we should have some really robust literacy reform in addition to what's coming, and I would have loved to have seen that in here. The other thing, it lacks local control to unlock innovation for our local districts, and I think that's what districts are asking. I know it is. I just had some of those teachers in my office this week, as well as superintendents, just freeing them up to innovate, the teachers, the school board members, with parents, and so on, allowing those local districts to solve the problems that we try to solve up here, but I think they're actually much better prepared to solve at that local level. The changes to public reporting, I think, really deny our parents and the public the vital information that they need when they need it. And when parents are not empowered, they're less likely to be engaged. And so I want to keep those parents empowered and the public to be involved in educating our children. We know it's teamwork. And finally, I believe the bill lowers expectations in certain areas, and I'm fully of the belief that we cannot close the achievement gap until we close the belief gap. The belief that every child can learn when challenged through academic rigor. And so, though I think there are some good components, and I really appreciate you involving some of our legislation. Thank you so much for that. I still will recommend a no vote, but I sure appreciate your work and working with you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Closing remarks, Chair Pryor.
I'll try to be brief, and I won't address the bill because we did have a discussion last night, and you will see it on the floor. And I'll go in detail again why we feel good about the bill that we do have in front of us. Even if it's not all the things that could have been done this year, I think the things that we were able to accomplish, we should all take pride in what we were able to accomplish. And then as we are in the room right here and I can see each of you, just to say thank you again and appreciate your work. And this is it. And well, I hope it is. Gosh. but it's been a great committee, and I think Minnesotans can be proud of the people that they sent here and the work that we do. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. And with that, Chair Pryor renews her motion to re-refer House File 3782 as amended to the General Register with the direction that staff make any technical corrections as necessary. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion carries, and House File 3782 as amended is on its way to the General Register. Well, folks, this completes our regularly scheduled committee work, and it looks like this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.